1976. New York City.
Pardon me, are you Aaron Burr, sir?
That depends. Who's asking?
Oh, well, sure. Sir, I'm Alexander.
Don't worry. You are listening to Political Rewind, but this is the Tony Awards edition of Political Rewind. Sunday night, Hamilton, the show that you just heard a brief song from, expected to win many Tony Awards, including for Best Show. And anybody who knows me knows that any chance I get to play music from that show, I will do it. But it's relevant to us because, of course, Aaron Burr is considered the father of modern political campaigning. And Jim Galloway, in 1800, he and Thomas Jefferson tied for president of the United States, and the contest had to be decided. Alexander Hamilton got into the mix. It was what made Hamilton and Burr enemies, and it was what led Burr to shoot and kill Hamilton.
When he was a sitting vice president.
As a sitting vice president of the United States, Hamilton fired his gun into the air. Burr shot him in the heart. So thank you for indulging me with my interest in Hamilton. So we're here to talk serious politics for the most part today, because this really has been, I think, Jim, a week in which there's been a seismic change in the presidential race. And we'll talk about it with you, Jim Galloway. He's the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You see his columns in the paper, Dead Tree paper, on Thursdays and Sundays. And of course, he oversees Political Insider, the daily blog that brings you everything you need to know about what's happening in politics. Julianne Thompson is back with us. She is a Republican political strategist. Very glad to have you back this week, Julianne. Just back from the GOP convention out in Augusta, as is Todd Rehm, who, of course, you all know is the editor of GeorgiaPundit.com. He, too, is a Republican political consultant. Todd was out in Augusta last week, so later in the show, we'll hear a little bit about what happened out there, but we'll also talk about how it points to what is likely to unfold in Cleveland. And joining us for the first time, a real pleasure to have Penny Allen. She is has done a lot of work for Hillary Clinton, raising money for Hillary Clinton, I think here in the Southeast primarily, Penny, or across country?
Primarily Southeast.
Okay, you're a delegate to the Democratic National Convention.
I am.
Which is wonderful. And we should say, because we believe in treating all people equally here, we have enough guests from Denton's on this show. We have an Alston Bird partner. Very nice to be
here. Absolutely. Let's give a shout out to those guys.
All right. So let's go ahead. Jim, it has been a week in which this is now serious. Hillary Clinton, Democratic nominee, Trump, the Republican nominee, it is joined.
Yes, your seismic shift there was the result of President Barack Obama pretty much stepping in on Thursday and declaring the Democratic race over.
Yeah, yeah.
He put his arm on Bernie's back and just gently shoved him to the edge of the stage.
And didn't waste any time, we should say, in going from the meeting he had yesterday with Sanders to announcing that he was endorsing Hillary Clinton, very quick.
It was obviously pre-taped.
Penny, well, it probably was actually, because they posted it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Penny, there are those people out there. Well, two things. Let's start with the Hillary Clinton news. Mm-hmm. What does this mean to you that she has finally put Bernie Sanders behind her, but more important, the ghost of 2008 and a failed campaign then behind her? How is this feeling right now?
Well, you've been talking about historic events, and I wouldn't put it quite like Burr and Hamilton, but it is an important event. I think it's an important event for her on a personal level for the reasons that you indicated, and it's an important event for our country and for both women and men of our country who finally see the ultimate glass ceiling shattered. I don't want to make too much of it as an historic event, because we've got a major campaign that we need to be moving on to. But, if you think about the fact that we've had the women's vote in the United States for less than 100 years, and as recently as the mid-90s, we only had 10% of our representatives in Congress who were women. It is a major event, and I think both she and to some extent President Obama and his remarks have taken a moment to step back and acknowledge that. And I think that's enough. We need to move on and face Donald Trump.
So let's talk in a minute about how Obama, how President Obama will be engaged in the campaign. But before we do that, Julianne, there are some people who certainly Sanders supporters who feel that the president really jumped in a little too quickly. Not that she doesn't have the delegates to be the nominee, but that they felt, why doesn't he just let him get through the last primary? He does want to participate in the final primaries next Tuesday, and that the president was awfully eager to jump in. But from a political point of view, when you've got a Donald Trump, who at least temporarily is on the ropes with all the problems he's having, isn't this exactly when you want to jump in?
Well, I think so. I mean, reality is sometimes very difficult to face in politics. And the fact of the matter is Hillary Clinton is their nominee. And she's a formidable one. But I think that Bernie Sanders is, you know, bent on being involved in the shaping of the future of the Democratic platform. And from what I am hearing from people, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is looking at the possibility of maybe vying for the title of Democratic national chairman himself. So, you know, I think that's the reason that he is pushing this. But where his supporters go still remains to be seen, especially the millennials.
Todd, the president's going to do his best to engage those younger Sanders supporters, well, all Sanders supporters in the Clinton campaign. They have their first joint appearance, Clinton and Obama, next week, I think Wednesday in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Typically a Democratic, traditionally a Democratic stronghold. They're going to use up the president to be competitive in states that they'd like to take away from Trump. Obama's pretty popular right now. He's going to be a good man to have on your side, isn't he?
I'd say that's true. But the question, I want to follow up on what Julianne said about the question being how much or to what extent do the millennials stick around. They're in much the same position with respect to Barack Obama as Brian Robinson said, people of my generation are in with respect to women in office. It's something they're used to. If you're 18, 19, 20, Barack Obama has been the president for most of your memories, and he may not be the revolutionary figure for them that he was when he first came into office. The second thing is that, and I think anybody who has done a lot of campaigns knows that somebody else's popularity can get you a little bump, but it can't carry you. There is a very limited extent to which somebody else's popularity and charisma rubs off. And in some ways, if I were working for Hillary Clinton, if I were advancing her her events, I would worry about, is she going to be upstaged by the president because he's got so much more charisma than she does and so much more magnetism. And so the great thing about having the president in your corner is he can command a nationwide audience whenever he wants. But so can Donald Trump, and frankly, so can Hillary Clinton.
Jim?
Well, one thing, if we could get back to Bernie just a little bit and whether his supporters will follow Hillary, something actually in the last 48 hours has happened that's very, very interesting. You've seen Elizabeth Warren really step up and number one, endorse Hillary in a very, very big way on MSNBC last night. And you know, to me, that's somebody trying to reclaim that movement that she kind of leased to Bernie over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I tell you what, Penny, I want to get you into this conversation. But as I do, let's listen, in fact, to what the president, after his in the Facebook video that the White House posted, or the campaign, I guess, posted following his meeting with Sanders. Here's what the president had to say about Bernie Sanders.
I had a great meeting with him this week, and I thanked him for shining a spotlight on issues like economic inequality and the outsized influence of money in our politics, and bringing young people into the process. Embracing that message is going to help us win in November. But more importantly, it'll make the Democratic Party stronger, and it will make America stronger. Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders may have been rivals during this primary, but they're both patriots who love this country, and they share a vision for the America that we all believe in. An America that's hopeful, an America that's big-hearted, an America that is strong and fair and gives every child the same chance that we had.
Penny, this is something that the supporters of Hillary Clinton have been looking for. The president finally getting in there and saying he wants Hillary for president. How important is it?
I think he will be very important in one of the primary areas that I think poses a challenge to the Democrats, and that is GOTV, getting out the vote, getting people to the polls. There's been a lot of talk about registration and all that, but the real point is going to be getting people to the polls. And that happens year in, year out, off your elections, it even to a greater extent, as we saw particularly in 2014 and 2010 here in Georgia. But getting Obama on the campaign trail, I think, will be a signal. And I don't disagree that he's been around for most of the life of some of these young people who are trying to get to the polls. But I think his help, I think, Jim, to your comment about Elizabeth Warren, I think that is an incredibly important step. I think she's an incredibly good candidate herself at some point. But right now, solidifying that portion of the electorate that supported Bernie Sanders, and there were a lot of them, is critical. And I think all you have to do is look at Hillary's speech Tuesday night and you take down the issues. I mean, it could have almost been Bernie giving that speech.
So what do we think this is going to mean in Georgia? It is, you know, Democrats' opinion, and then I want everybody to weigh in this, keep saying Georgia's a purple state. It's not a purple state at this point. Would you, as someone who's been raising money for the Clinton campaign, you ought to have a voice in at least some of this. Mm-hmm. Would you urge them to spend much time here in Georgia?
Well, it's interesting. There have been polls, and they're now at least a month or so old, that show Hillary can beat Donald here. And that would portend it makes sense to invest. Now, I think you have limited dollars. You have to look at the most strategic places, and I don't know how those numbers sort out when you look at some of the other possibly purple states, whether it's Florida or North Carolina or Colorado, whatever it might be. I would love to see investment here in Georgia, and there is investment, not through her campaign, but through the Democratic Party itself.
Julianne, I would think that Republicans would love to see the Clinton forces come on down here, spend money and resources on a state that's going to be a tough win for them.
Well, I mean, like you said, we're still a red state, but we are on the verge of the possibility of going purple in the next few years. And I think that that's really not anything to do with this particular election, although this election could benefit from it, and everything to do with two things on how the Georgia Republican Party positions itself in the next year and next year with new leadership. And going back to what you said just a few minutes ago about the effectiveness of Democrats get out the vote effort versus Republicans, when I look back at the 2012 election, I mean, there was absolutely no doubt about the fact that Democrats had a much better GoTV machine than we did. I was down in Florida for part of the election that the Republican National Committee had already pulled out of Florida and declared it a win. And of course, we lost, but they had already declared it a win and pulled their forces out of Florida. I had to go down to Florida, and I was one of the people that oversaw the recount for Alan West at the West Palm Beach Board of Elections. Mm. And you look on one side of the street and you see the Democrats with the latest technology, and you saw us on the other side of the street with, you know, Excel spreadsheets, and you just knew that they had done a much better job with GoTV.
Look, if you see Hillary Clinton spending significant cash in Georgia, Republicans are going to be in an absolute panic, because that means that Democrats feel they can run the table. Mm-hmm. I think you're much more likely to see Democrats invest heavily in North Carolina, where you've got that HB2 roiling the waters. Mm-hmm. You've got a governorship at stake, and you've got a U.S. Senate seat that's gettable.
You want to get into this, Todd?
I think that if the Clinton campaign starts spending some time here, I think one of the weaknesses they're going to learn is that the Georgia Democratic Party, who really kind of found a last-minute candidate in the person of Jim Barksdale, and didn't even bother to contest the other statewide election on the ballot this year. I don't know if they couldn't or just chose not to put up a public service commissioner candidate.
Not a bad point on the Senate candidate. It's not the same kind of campaign that he'll be running as you traditionally have seen, or certainly as say a Michelle Nunn did, but there is investment going on right now in Georgia and tremendous hiring going on for a field operation for, to make that GOTV a reality.
These are the 16 spots that they were talking about? The 16 field positions?
Yes. And that work could make a difference.
So let's make sure everybody, when we say GOTV, get out the vote, okay? Just to be, because there are some people who listen to the show who aren't using the shorthand that we do, so thank you for that. I'll tell you what, here's what I'd like to do, because we'll watch in the weeks ahead to see what happens with the Clinton campaign in Georgia, and we'll certainly keep on top of it. But you talked about Elizabeth Warren, Jim. She met with Mrs. Clinton this morning, right, at Mrs. Clinton's home, Hillary's home in Washington. A lot of speculation, of course, that she could be the number two on the ticket at this point. But here's the context in which I'd like to talk about it, if I can. First, let's listen to just a little bit of Elizabeth Warren going after Donald Trump last night.
Trump is picking on someone who is ethically bound not to defend himself. Exactly what you would expect from a thin-skinned racist bully. You shame yourself and you shame this great country. Donald Trump is a loud, nasty, thin-skinned fraud who has never risked anything for anyone and who serves no one but himself. And we will not allow a small, insecure, thin-skinned, wannabe tyrant or his allies in the Senate to destroy the rule of law in the United States of America. We will not.
So Elizabeth Warren last night talking about Trump.
Please, Elizabeth, tell us what you really think.
She at the beginning was, of course, talking about Trump's attacks on Judge Curiel, who is handling the Trump University suit. So here's the context in which I'd love to start you off on this, Jim. We know, and we'll talk in a few minutes about the kind of couple of weeks that Trump himself has had. It seems to me, yesterday you had the Obama endorsement. You had the vice president, Joe Biden, really go after Trump in no uncertain terms, calling him a racist, calling him a fraud, lots of other language. You have Elizabeth Warren. It seems to me that at least this week, Democrats are united. They really see blood in the water, and they are in a full-throated attack on Donald Trump.
They see a candidate who is wounded, who is losing support among Republicans. Mark Kirk, Republican incumbent senator from Illinois, disavowed the Donald. You had in Georgia Georgia Right to Life refused to endorse him. They went with the Constitutional Party candidate.
Mitch McConnell has now said that he better get his act together.
Trump just finished over at the Faith and Freedom Coalition meeting over in Washington, D.C. He used a teleprompter, and he made the point that it was wrong to discriminate on the basis of color.
Yeah.
And that's, so you can see him trying to claw back, but he is clawing back.
Well, let's make it really clear with regard to the Georgia Right to Life lack of endorsement. I mean, they withheld an endorsement from Barry Loudermilk this year, who is one of the most pro-life congressmen in the United States Congress, simply because he voted for the fetal pain bill. And they consider that to be discriminatory against fetuses under 20 weeks. So I wouldn't look at a Georgia Right to Life endorsement as any sort of real rebuke against Donald Trump, because they're coming out against him.
So Julianne, let's ask it a different way then. And let me preface this by saying, look, we in the media are great at the way in which we pounce on people when they're vulnerable, when they're having problems. And we use hyperbolic rhetoric in saying his campaign is dead. And then 3 weeks later, all of a sudden it's what a comeback. I mean, I'm aware that the media, Hillary Clinton's got a lot of problems that she's going to have to address. And so we could be talking this way about her a month down the line. But right now, with this snapshot right now, are you worried about your candidate, Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, with regard to what you said about the media jumping on it, yes, I agree with you. But I don't think that there's anybody in this room that with a straight face can say that they called this election correctly. I think everybody in this room has said time and time again, Donald Trump isn't going to survive this comment or that comment. And then just when we think he's not going to be in the primary for the next 30 days, he gets a bump in the polls and eventually clinches the nomination. So I don't think you can underestimate him where that's concerned.
Does he represent right now the kind of candidate that you feel you can stand behind proudly?
Well, as you know, I started out as co-chairman of the state campaign for Governor Scott Walker, and then I was the national co-chairman of Women for Cruz with the Cruz campaign. So Donald Trump was not my first choice. But the voters have spoken loudly and clearly, and he has clinched the nomination. So
okay, Todd,
I will support him.
Todd, it's interesting now, two speeches in a row, we got Trump on a teleprompter, apparently refining his message, trying to stay on script. If you're a Republican, you've got to be heartened that perhaps he is heeding the advice of people who tell him to stop just running amok.
Part of me is heartened that he is listening to other people's advice, and part of me says, let him go. Let Trump be Trump. If that's the candidate we're going to have, let him do it, because there's nothing I can tell him about winning a Republican primary, certainly. Like Julianne said, I thought that he would have taken himself out voluntarily by this point. I am reminded of the great fight between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, where Ali astounded everyone by looking like he was on the defensive most of the campaign, most of the fight, and let Foreman wear himself out in the rope-a-dope fight. A lot of this stuff, a lot of this sound and fury that's coming out of the Democratic Party, I think is going to have about as much effect as Rick Perry's attacks and Marco Rubio's attacks and all the other attacks we've seen. Those of us on the Republican side have the experience of having watched the Republican primary and watched what should take any candidate out of contention for dog catcher in a local office just not have the least bit of effect on this man.
But I will tell you, Donald Trump on a teleprompter may be the Donald Trump, may be the fellow who takes out the real Donald Trump, because that Donald Trump isn't the fresh fellow that's been winning these primaries.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I say that part of my feeling is dance with the one who brung you. And we didn't get it.
Is this a candidate you can be proud of? The way Donald Trump is when he's just Donald Trump?
You know, I don't look to candidates for redemption or for saving the world.
Nobody's asking you to. I'm asking you quite simply if you are going to be able to proudly stand up and say, I cannot wait for Donald Trump to be president of the United States.
I know to pause there.
and go ahead, Julianne, and then I'm going to get Penny
okay,
in here.
I just wanted to say that this isn't about GOP insiders, and it hasn't been from the very beginning. People are tired of politicians that campaign one way and govern another, and frankly, they're tired of what political pundits have to say.
Well, that's why...
It's about what you hear at the grocery store, and it's about what you hear on the bleachers when you're watching your child play baseball.
You are so right, and I think what's interesting about that is that's exactly why the Paul Ryans of the world are having a hard time figuring out where they stand on Donald Trump, what to say about Donald Trump. Let's listen very quickly to Ryan talking yesterday to Andrea Mitchell.
Well, look, I think there's no justifying those comments, and I was very clear about that. And I think everybody, not just Republicans, should disavow comments like that. And I'm glad he walked it back. This is a long campaign, a long way to go, and he has a ways to go to give us a campaign that we can all be proud of.
So, Paul Ryan, and the reason I brought that up now is when you're a Republican elected official, Penny, you have 13 million people who voted for Donald Trump in a primary. It's pretty hard to ignore them. and suddenly say we got to get rid of Trump as a candidate. It's an awkward position. It's probably a terrible position for Nathan Deal to be in right now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, we have a political system that clearly on both the Democratic and the Republican side, there have been loud calls, and Republicans successfully, that, you know, the establishment, if you will, is not responding. And that's a weakness, you know, in both parties, frankly, and something, you know, that that needs to be addressed.
I let me go back. And I am hesitant to say that Donald Trump is the candidate that I've been waiting all my lifetime for. But I do want to say this. I want to say that as a Republican, one thing that I have learned is that to trust in the voters and to make my own decision based on what we learn about the candidate over the course of time. And I'm still open to becoming an enthusiastic supporter.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
One thing I would note, and you all know more than I do, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. The Republicans, as a party, cannot elect a president because they simply don't have the numbers. And so it's all about being able to persuade some large portion of either Democrats or independents to vote for him. And I think in that context, having such a divisive candidate, even though he was obviously the majority, you know, substantial majority vote receiver in the government, it is almost irrelevant because you're going to have to be pulling over others. And that's where I think the most difficult part of the problem for Republicans is going to be.
Fascinating analysis, though, in the New York Times this week, pointing out that exit polls probably underestimated somewhat dramatically the number of white voters in the 2012 presidential race, and suggesting that Trump may have a larger pool of voters to draw from than those exit polls in 2012 would suggest, Julianne.
Well, yes. And going back to what we said just a second ago, Donald Trump's biggest hurdle is not going to be facing Hillary in November. It's going to be healing and uniting a very fractured Republican Party that's gone through a very tumultuous campaign, a primary season. And, you know, it's incumbent upon him to do the reaching out and to heal those wounds, because right now they're very, very acute.
All right, let's do this. I'll let you get a last word in, then we got to take a break, Todd.
One of the other things I've learned in my life is that when you find yourself repeatedly in a ditch, usually it's your own best thinking that got you there. Mm-hmm. And we as Republicans have found ourselves in a ditch time and time and time again. And maybe what we've been trying the last few cycles isn't working, and we need to try something radically different.
Okay. I think that's a great way to end our first segment of the show. It's 3:33. You can join this conversation by tweeting us at PoliticsGPB. Reach out to us on the Twitter, and we'll see if we can put some of your comments on the air. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma went searching for the greatest musicians on the planet. Together, they formed the Silk Road Ensemble.
For me, the idea is to develop enough technique so that you could use that technique to explore.
Yo-Yo Ma on the new film about his Silk Road Ensemble later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 until 7 on GPB.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut, joined by our panel of insiders. Today, Julianne Thompson, a Republican strategist here in Georgia. Penny Allen joins us at the table for the first time. She is a Hillary Clinton delegate at the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia and is also a bundler, as we say. She's raised a lot of money for Hillary Clinton here in the Southeast. Todd Rehm, Republican strategist and editor of Georgia Pundit, .com, which I hope you will check out on a daily basis, as you should check out Jim Galloway's Political Insider blog at AJC.com. And of course, Jim is the political writer for AJC. So, Jim, you and I didn't make the long trip out to Augusta. Julianne Thompson and Todd Rehm did, so we'll hear from them in a minute. But what, as a journalist, were your takeaways from what you saw unfold out there?
Number one, there was no slitting of throats in the scramble in the scramble to get to Cleveland. I mean, there was some maneuvering here and some disappointed faces, but not a whole lot of blood was shed. I think the most interesting thing was actually David Perdue. In his blue jean jacket, putting on that red cap of Donald Trump,
Todd,
and giving an argument for him.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Todd, you told me when you got back from Augusta that you thought the Purdue speech was one of the genuine highlights of the weekend. Why?
I'm not going to say it was a highlight. I was going to say it was the news-making part of the time. It was one of the most enthusiastic endorsements of Trump by an elected official that I've seen, and it's coming from somebody who can be said by some to have started the outsider movement in not just in Georgia politics but nationally. And I thought it was interesting that that Perdue really did something that I. It's easy to think of him as always being in a sport coat or a suit, and he sort of literally shed the sport coat. I thought it was an interesting.
Well, he went back to his campaign jacket.
It was a bit of theatricality that I wouldn't have expected.
Interesting, Julianne. You said that Republicans have to come together. Trump's job is going to be to unite Republicans, bring them back to the table together. Mm-hmm. In Augusta last weekend, you had to do something quite similar, didn't you? You had you were a Cruz supporter. You were part of the effort to elect more Cruz delegates to the Republican convention than Trump delegates. But last week,
no, I supported a unity slate.
Okay, then I apologize for that. Did we see that coming together? What about the fact there were so many Cruz folks out at that convention last weekend? How did that all work out now that we know Trump's the nominee?
I think that the Georgia Republican Party worked really hard to try to come up with a unity slate, and I think that they did a good job with it. I think that there were people offering an alternative slate as well. That doesn't mean that there weren't any Cruz people on the Georgia Republican Party slate. There were, but it was more of a unity slate that contained Trump people, Bush people, Cruz people, Rubio people, and it was really based on qualification rather than who the candidate
was.
Yeah,
I should correct myself and say that what I meant about the Cruz delegates that you were for was back at the district, at the congressional district level. You were one of those people who overwhelmed Trump, even though he won the state, and elected more Cruz delegates.
Well, at that time, we could have had a contested convention.
Right. Okay, Jim?
Well, number one, it was one of those, you two correct me if I'm wrong, but this is one of those rare instances where the Cruz people were the more disorganized, because mm-hmm. they had their specific slate that they wanted to push. I think maybe 31 delegates alternate, and then a like number
correct.
Of alternates. But six people they didn't fill out the right forms.
That's
and so
correct.
It invalidated the whole slate.
To the extent that Republicans came together in Augusta in a group hug, I think it was primarily because we were all so exhausted we were afraid we wouldn't be able to stay on our feet any longer otherwise, and nobody else wanted to hug the rest of us.
But I will tell you, after that convention was over, the Cleveland delegates all kind of locked themselves together in a room and sorted things out. And the two Georgia members of the Rules Committee will be Randy Evans and Ann Lewis.
That's
pretty
correct.
pretty much the top legal minds of the state GOP, which is preparatory for a just in case situation in Cleveland.
Well, they were our Rules representatives in 2012 as well, and they're both very well qualified. I mean, Randy Evans is on TV all the time talking about
really,
yeah,
not Randy,
Randy.
And he's been a great guest on this show as well. So let's move, if we can. I'll bring you into this too, Penny, in a minute. But So next week, Trump comes to town. He's going to have a breakfast fundraiser. Jim, you got all the details about the levels of giving. Pretty fascinating. It's a big money event.
Yeah, it's, well, they want it to be a big money event. We'll see how it turns out.
Okay, fair enough. So,
at 7:30 in the morning.
It's a huge money event.
7:30 is, you see, this is what reporters, they get up late. Business people in this town, Penny, you know, they get up and go to breakfast meetings at 7:30.
Yeah, but when you're retired, you don't. And you know, I agree. These people may be giving the big money so they don't have to go.
There you go. What do we make, Todd, of Nathan Deal? Says, don't blame me, I voted for Jeb Bush. Says, I'm not sure I'm going to be in Cleveland. Now has put his name in there as one of the leaders in terms of this fundraiser.
I think Governor Deal is doing what he's what is expected of him by the rest of the party. And, you know, I don't think it's tempting to say he's kind of making amends for some of the alienation that has arisen between him and the grassroots, but none of the grassroots are going to be at this thing.
Right, right. Bernie Marcus is one of the chairs of this event.
But I think that it also reflects the fact that the state of Georgia still retains a vast interest in projects like the Savannah River Harbor, the Savannah Harbor expansion, that we're going to need help from whomever the president is. And if Trump wins, we need to have been on the side.
Penny, let me read a couple tweets, and then I want to ask you about whether we know anything about Hillary Clinton coming down here. Mm-hmm. You raised a lot of money, all of you, in the Clinton campaign on Georgia without doing a whole lot of real campaigning here. And let's talk about the future. But first, Richard Flynn tweets, what about this, Dave? Well, we're not going to go there. Richard Flynn talks about a story with David Perdue we're going to get to in just a couple of minutes, a comment that Perdue made at the Faith and Freedom Coalition conference in Washington. Royal Reuter says, as a lifelong Republican who's been active in both the campaigns in the past and an RNC delegate, I cannot support Trump. Amanda says, Donald as Donald. His own daughter asked, why does he hate my best friend who's Muslim, age 10, so presidential? I'm not aware of that. Is that real or is that fanciful? Do we think Donald's...
It's on the internet, so it's got to be true.
Okay. All right. So, Penny, we talked before about whether Georgia will go for Hillary Clinton or not. Mm-hmm. Certainly, this is a great state to raise money in. Are there plans for Hillary Clinton to come back down here and have a fundraiser?
There are no current plans, to my knowledge. I mean, I've seen the calendar that goes out over about the next month for our top three, Hillary, Bill, and Chelsea. Obviously, they are working hard on surrogates, so that may develop. But I'm sure they will be back between now and the fall. When and in what form, don't know.
Okay. All right, so let's do this. We have a few other stories that relate to Georgia more specifically that I'd love to turn to with the time we have left. One of them is the story I just alluded to. And Todd Rehm has already, we talked about the fact we were going to discuss this story, which just broke earlier today. Jim, David Perdue went in front of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and he quoted a proverb, Psalms 108:9, that has been used by Republicans in the past about Obama, and it caused something, I don't know, firestorms, probably an exaggeration, but it got the attention of the Washington Post and other national publications.
It's running pretty hard on Twitter this afternoon.
Okay, I haven't seen that. Okay.
Okay. Now, do we have the audio?
We
don't.
Do. What did you call for it? We do. Go ahead.
Please, can we have the audio?
You know, I think we are called to pray. I think we're called to pray for our country, for our leaders, and yes, even our president. You know, in his role as president, I think we should pray for Barack Obama, but I think we need to be very specific about how we pray. We should pray like Psalms 109:8 says. It says, let his days be few, and let another have his office.
That's David Perdue.
Beware of politicians quoting Bible verses.
What does the quote go on to say?
Well, it just says, you know, I hope, you know, your kids die, your wife leaves you, your dog dies. I mean, it's kind of a Conan the Barbarian quote, if I remember. But here's the thing, that this is, you know, that you're right, that was kind of routine Republican fodder several years ago. But the difference is now that is that we can see the end of the Obama presidency. I mean, he's 6 months away from leaving the stage here, and it doesn't ring quite as good as it did back then, I don't think. You know, it just doesn't resonate.
Yeah, I also wonder if two things about this. Number one, Todd, I'm going to let you respond to this. Media, again, we love to find something to grab onto and run with. But it also, doesn't it speak to some extent to just how tremendously, another example of how polarized we are, that we seize on these things as a way to vilify our opponent? We don't really in this room think that David Perdue is praying for Barack Obama to die, do we?
No, I think that he spoke maybe the sentence or the sentence or before he said that, he said in his capacity as president. And so I think when he said, let his days be few, in office is the parenthetical part of that. You know, David Perdue is just not that guy if you're looking for somebody to say crazy radical things. I think there's a lot of manufactured outrage. I think that's most of what Twitter traffics in. Is manufactured outrage, and it's getting old to me. I think the greatest deficit it points up is joke writers with Republican credentials. We need to get better as a party at making good jokes instead of recycling ones that have been out there on bumper stickers for the last 5 years.
Penny?
I just shrug my shoulders. I mean, I do agree with you. I think Twitter has destroyed public discourse in many respects. I suspect I obviously was not a supporter of Mr. Perdue, but I don't think he meant anything other than he hoped we would have a Republican president in 6 months.
In some ways, let me ask you, Julianne, is this those Republicans who have chosen to demonize Barack Obama, who've questioned his birth certificate, who've questioned all these things about him, who have raised some questions about his mixed race, that sort. In some ways, when the criticism comes like this, is it the pigeons coming home to roost?
Well, I think this is politics. I think that if you are running a race for president, and you are perhaps a surrogate for someone running, I mean, it's natural to attack the other side, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. So, you know, I think that would be hypocritical to just accuse one party of doing that. I agree 100% with what Todd said. I mean, and it's ridiculous to think that David Perdue meant anything other than just a joke.
Okay, and I think we should all go on record at the Political Rewind studio and saying we don't believe that Perdue meant that he wanted Obama to die.
And Perdue's office has put out a statement saying that he in no way intended any harm.
I will tell you but in terms of how this sort of thing becomes a big deal, Josh Earnest had to respond to this in the daily briefing at the White House today. He said the president did make note of Perdue's comments. He said if Perdue is considering an apology, there are a variety of other scriptures he could consult. So enough of that. We'll put that to rest. Jim Galloway, let's turn to something a little lighter for a couple of minutes. Every week, the Republicans in the United States Senate have what they call the Thursday group, where one senator provides a meal, a luncheon, that is supposedly made up of the foods of that senator's state, right?
Right, right. Yep, it's the only one.
That's right. The single most popular of the Thursday groups has become, as you guys reported in Political Insider today,
a Johnny Isaacson-sponsored barbecue fest.
And they had it today.
Yesterday. And I'm sure it was delicious. It's done by a fella named Sam Huff, He is he was a Democrat back in the 70s, ran for DA unsuccessfully once over in Cobb County. He has a shop not far from my house over in West Cobb off Dallas Highway. He is currently a bipartisan barbecuer. He believes in both pigs and cows. Yeah. But I will tell you that his best dish probably wasn't on the menu in D.C. He makes just the most delicious beef tips.
It was on the menu.
Oh,
the reason I know this is that this is how big a deal this has become. Jennifer Steinhauer, who's a congressional correspondent for the New York Times, did a Facebook Live that ran for about 12 minutes this morning. They posted it this morning, talking about this barbecue. And I thought it would be fun to... This is the only Thursday group meeting that is totally bipartisan, Democrats as well as Republicans, and now they've expanded it. Johnny says he wants the cops, the other workers in the Capitol, all to be able to participate in this because he says if you don't take care of the people who work for you, you're not worth a whole lot. So let's just listen. Oh, go ahead, Todd.
I was going to say in that vein, I hope you noticed that the first person I offered a donut to was the guard who lets me in.
Todd Rehm brought us Sublime Donuts. We've already tweeted a picture out of them, so take a look at what we get to eat here after the show. Jenny, why don't we play what Johnny told the New York Times about this?
What kind of things are spoken about at your lunch? People just talking about barbecue and food, or do you think this is
a little business, too.
Business?
Sometimes barbecue is the route to getting a deal done. You never know.
Say more about that.
Well, you know, somebody said, you know, I like this food. Maybe I'll take a second look at the amendment you offered later on today.
That sounds like a circuitous route, Senator. You think that's going to happen today?
You know, the route to any man's heart's through his stomach.
Who's the most surprising barbecue fan in your mind? Who loves this more than anybody?
I don't know anybody who stands out any more than anybody else. They're always asking me, when's our barbecue day coming? Because I want to make sure I'm there.
By the way, this was also a national seersucker suit day. And if you go to the New York Times website, you'll see that Johnny Isaacson is participating by wearing a seersucker suit in that video. You know, Penny, I know he's on the other side of the aisle from you, but this is the sort of thing that makes Johnny Isaacson one of the most beloved political leaders in Georgia. Yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will say I am not a barbecue fan, for the record.
Do you think you're going to win Hillary Clinton any votes making a statement like that?
Probably not. But, you know, I just thought we needed full disclosure today. But, you know, I mean, he really is emblematic, I think, of something we can all, as observers of the political scene, admire. And that has been lost dramatically in Washington. And I would ascribe it more to the Republicans than the Democrats. But the notion of getting together, of talking, of discussing our issues and moving forward is, of course, something, you know, we can go back to Sam Nunn as another great Georgian and great example of that. And maybe it's Georgians.
You know, Jim, one of the other reasons I wanted to play that today is because it does remind me of an era in Georgia politics that you'll remember well. The guy who used to be the political barbecue master, Oscar Poole.
Yes. Well, you can still find him at every state GOP convention. He wears a banana yellow suit with a very, very tall kind of Uncle Sam hat.
Right. And he used to take his Julianne? He would get a trailer and go to Washington. He'd be up there for presidential inaugurations and all sorts of events. And
Poole is still a truly great American, and he's out there and... we're so proud of him. He's a Georgia Republican treasure.
Todd?
I grew up eating Williamson Brothers at Republican Party events, and that's what has stuck with me over the years.
See, there's a difference between you young guys and older people like me and Galloway. So a shout-out to Oscar Poole and his partner in crime, the great Joe McCutcheon, another one of the great conservative Republicans from up in the North Georgia mountains. Back to something a little more serious with the last minutes that we have. Todd, let me come to you on this, because we talked before about the fact that Drew Ferguson, who's in a runoff down there with Mike Thorne in the 3rd Congressional District race to replace Lynn Westmoreland, who retires, has been winning the endorsements of all the other. There were 7 candidates in the race. 4 of those 7 had endorsed him. Jim's Political Insider blog reported this morning that Jim Pace, who came in a very close 3rd to Ferguson, has now endorsed Drew Ferguson, too. But is Ferguson going to win this thing?
First of all, the other candidate is Mike Crane.
I'm sorry,
it's Mike Crane.
I'm thinking about Cobb County.
And Drew Ferguson.
Yeah.
I'm going to the heart of the district tomorrow morning to speak to the Coweta Republican Party, and so maybe I'll have some more intelligence for y'all next week. But what I would say is that, you know, we've talked about how the insider-outsider thing doesn't seem to be that big a deal in elections. I will say that I don't know how much endorsements of other candidates help this year, and that it is an advantage. You want everybody endorsing you. You always want all the other candidates endorsing you. But there is something about Mike Crane's support that is it's more energetic than
a lot of candidates I've seen. Far more intense.
And so if it's going to be, if we end up with a high turnout runoff that Drew Ferguson, that's what he's looking for, I think Mike Crane benefits from a smaller one that's controlled by the intensity.
And Julianne, I assume that what Todd is saying, the intensity is based on the fact that with Mike Crane, you know exactly where he stands ideologically. He's on the correct side of the issues that the very conservative voters in the 3rd District care about, right?
And the energy is with him organically with the grassroots. I think that's what Todd is saying, and I agree. Of course, we've all been wrong throughout this entire election cycle and could call this election wrong. But speaking of the 3rd District, I want to give a shout out to Georgia Republican Party 3rd District District Chairman Dale Jackson, who helped usher in a resolution at the Georgia Republican Party for the study of cannabis oil for intractable seizure disorder and autism, as well as other disorders as well. Alan Peek, who is the state representative, who is always behind the cannabis bill. It received a lot of support at the Republican convention.
Oh, out of the convention.
Passed, yes, the resolution passed.
By the way, and we've only got a minute, what didn't receive a lot of support, I forgot to bring it up at the convention, was any attempt to censure in some way.
You had a very, I'd say, politely
Governor
worded.
Governor Deal is what I was
you had
say.
A politely worded a resolution that didn't call anybody out by name, but just said certain people in the state leadership had wandered away from their Republican values.
It was called a return to Republican principles, and it was basically a rebuke of the vetoes of campus carry and RFRA, and it carried with overwhelming support.
But on the other hand, again, we got 20 seconds for you to give us an answer. The convention did not want to speak harshly about the governor.
That's true.
Okay. Todd, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We're out of time. Julianne Thompson, Penny Allen, Todd Rehm, Jim Galloway, thank you all so much for being here for Political Rewind today. Just want a quick program note for you. Tomorrow on Two-Way Street at 4 o'clock and then Sunday at 11 a.m., really interesting conversation. The author, Simon Sebag Montefiore, tells the story of the Romanovs, the 300-plus-year dynasty that ruled Russia in a way that no other political dynasty ever has. It's about murder. It's about sex perverts. It's about, talk about politics that are corrupt and exciting. You do not want to miss this show. I'm Bill Nigut. We'll see you again next Wednesday for another Political Rewind.